Good evening. I'm going to give you a little bit of a look as to what happens on the other side. Meaning that I work for Eish HaTorah, and I think all of you know that Eish HaTorah is involved in Kiruv HaChayim, that what we're dealing with is secular Jews, Jews that are today very, very, very far away from Yiddishkeit, much further than they used to be. I got involved in Eish HaTorah many, many, many years ago with Mr. Mensch's father. Sorry, I'm not supposed to reveal that. In any event, I've been involved in Eish HaTorah for over 30 years. I went to Eish HaTorah as a 19-year-old. It's a long story. Maybe the next time we'll tell you that story. But in any event, when I went to Eish HaTorah, most of the young men there, their parents were Jewish. They had a Jewish father, a Jewish mother. Most of the Bachram there, the students who were studying there, their parents were married. Today, the vast majority of students in Eish HaTorah come from broken homes. There are very few whose parents are not divorced. And I would say over 50% of the students in Eish HaTorah, their fathers are not Jewish. So you hear about assimilation. In 30 years that I've been involved with Eish HaTorah, assimilation has happened. The fabric of the Jewish people in North America is completely different. Not only are they from broken homes, their fathers are not Jewish. Many of them are raised as Christians, even though they're Jewish. But they're often not even American. They are Russians. They're Russian immigrants. They're Iranian immigrants. Meaning that if you would separate out all of the immigrants that came to the United States or Canada in the last 25 years, and just look, okay, who are the American Jewry, what you call American Jewry? Their parents are Americans. Their grandparents are American. It's a disappearing breed. It's covered over. The statistics are covered over by the fact that there's so much immigration of Russians and Iranian Jews that there's still a significant population of Jews in North America. But the assimilation of American Jewry, American children, American parents, American grandchildren is obscured by the immigration. Assimilation has had a devastating impact on American Jewry. It's disappeared. It's kimut disappeared. Intermarriage right now amongst all Jews in the United States of America is at about 71%. I mean, 71% of the Jewish people that are going to get married are going to marry goyim. Okay, some of them will be women, they'll marry Jews, their children will be Jewish. But nonetheless, the vast majority of children that come from intermarriages are raised as goyim. They're not raised as Jews. There's a guy in Eish HaTorah today, he was raised as a Catholic. A Christian. His father's a guy. His mother was Jewish. She was raised as a Christian, even though she knew she was Jewish. He got involved with Eish HaTorah. He came on a birthright trip. He ended up staying. He came to Eish. He studied. He has tattoos over his entire, both his arms. All his arms are covered in tattoos. On his left arm, he's a righty. On his left arm, he has a gigantic cross with a crucifixion of you-know-who. And every morning he comes to yeshiva, he puts on tefillin. You get it? On top of the cross. That picture of here's this kid who was completely lost, raised as a guy, right, putting on tefillin on top of a crucifixion of JC on his arm, that is, in a nutshell, the reality of Jewish life in North America today. It's devastating. You guys don't realize, you take for granted what you have. You know, the Rebbeim here push you to learn, come to Seder, learn, shtai, grow, mitzvahs. You guys take it for granted. You don't realize that you should kiss the Rebbeim of this yeshiva every day. Okay, this day and age you can't do those things, but you know what I mean? But you should thank them. You should thank your parents. You should thank Hashem every day that you're a frum Jew, that you can do mitzvahs, that you have a smell of what reality is. You have some type of orientation to what life is really about, that there's a Seder to your existence. There's a Kadosh Baruch Hu, there's Torah Misinai, there's Halacha, there's a Mesorah, there's Chachamim, there's Rabbanim. You know, you don't realize you guys are rich, you're billionaires in Ruchnius. And you know what's going on in the streets? You know what's going on out there? You know what these people are into? You guys, you got a taste of it. You see kids off the derrick. You see problems. I understand that. But you have no idea how bad it is, how depraved it is, how disgusting it is, how hurtful it is, how upside down it is, how confused it is, how messed up these people are. They don't know which way is up. They have no idea. They're completely confused. I'm a soul, a body, a Yetzirah, a Yetzirah. They have no idea. They're completely messed up and involved in all types of garbage. So I'm going to give you a little bit of a look into how do you unravel this thing? How do you straighten these people out? Okay, I'm going to tell you a story that Rabbi Weinberg Zatzal, the founder of Eshet Torah, used to tell. And he would tell a story about a great man, his name Rabbi Eliezer Silver. Rabbi Eliezer Silver was a rabbi, lived in Cincinnati. He was an Orthodox rabbi, and he was the leader of the Vat Hatzalah in America during the Holocaust, during World War II. And he made all types of efforts with other people well known to try to save Jews during the Holocaust. When the war ended, he went to Europe, and he did what he could to take care of Jews in DP camps, displaced person camps. He would get them sidurim, help them find each other. You know, you can understand there was tremendous displacement, tremendous problems, and in any way he could help, he would help. And he went as a member of the United States Army. And on Sundays, he would put on his United States Army fatigues. He had a uniform. And he would have a jeep at his disposal, and he would take two or three Marines with him with weapons. And he would go, he was in Poland, and he would go to the largest church that he could find, and he would find out when is High Mass. When is High Mass? When are they going to be praying in this church? And he would make sure to show up at that church at High Mass when the most amount of non-Jews were there. And he would come in unannounced, as you can imagine, this rabbi in a military uniform with three soldiers with weapons. And you can imagine, you know, the fright of the people in the church. And he'd walk up to the front of the church, and he would say as loud as he could, Shema Yisrael, Hashem Elokein, Hashem Echad. And he would look at the faces of all the children. And any kid that recognized those words, he'd tell the soldier, take this kid, take this kid, take this kid, take this kid. Because they knew that many Jewish parents, to save their children, left them with their Goyisha neighbors. He knew there were Jews in these churches, so he would go with the soldiers and save Jews. You say, Shema Yisrael, Hashem Elokeinu, Hashem Echad. The kids recognized that. That was one of the things that they remembered. Anyone who had a moment of recognition, he took them, saved them, and took them to Jewish families to be adopted. So today, Shema Yisrael has a double meaning. Has a double meaning. That on the one hand, you see this man, Rabbi Eliezer Silver, he had the confidence, walk into a church, high mass, speak Torah, so to speak, to them, and save these Jews. He understood this life and death, saving lives here. And he said, Shema Yisrael, he said a word, he said a pasuk, that the kids would understand, that they would recognize, that it resonated with them, it spoke to them. So in Kiruv, you need the same thing. You need the same commitment. That you got to be prepared to say Shema Yisrael, which means you have to be clear, and you have to be confident, and you have to be sure of yourself, that Torah really has what people want. It's what they're looking for. That you've got the antidote, you've got the secret, you've got really what people are really desperately in need of. And you've got to say it in a way that they recognize it, that it resonates. You can't go to a college campus today and say, Shema Yisrael, Hashem Elokein, Hashem Echad. They go, you know, what's your problem? But you have to find the way to say it that they recognize that Torah is speaking to them. That the Torah is not outdated. The Torah is real. The Torah is what they want. They're searching for Torah. They just don't realize it. So I'll give you three examples of both ways. How to feel confident. If you understood this about yourself and Torah, you would realize that every Jew needs Torah. And you'd have that basic self-confidence that you could be a Makariv, whether formally or informally. And what do you say to them? How do you show them that this is really what they're looking for? It's the same thing. So there are three basic points. Okay, three basic points. The first point is that you have to understand that the essence of a human being, this is going to sound like a strange statement, but give me a minute, I'll explain. But the essence of a human being is, a pleasure seeker. A human being, by definition, seeks pleasure. That's what every human being does the moment they wake up to the moment they go to bed. They seek fulfillment, pleasure. How do you know that's true? Because every single decision that a human being will make, whether it's trivial, what to have for breakfast, cereal, toast, eggs, the yogurt, whatever it is, or very important decisions, should I stay a second year in yeshiva? Who should I marry? From the very important decisions to the trivial decisions, we use one basic criteria to choose A over B or B over A. And that is, we always choose that which we believe will give us greater pleasure and fulfillment. That is what a human being does. Now, there's levels to it, and there's a certain sophistication to it. But leaving that aside for now, fundamentally, that's what human beings do. You got that? Now, the truth is, it's not really true. Because if you tap any person on the shoulder and ask them, let me ask you a question. How much pleasure would you like right now? A little bit? A medium amount? Or the maximum? What would that person tell you? If I get the maximum, give me the maximum. Give me the most. Great. No one's running away from the maximum. So really, a human being is not a pleasure seeker. They're really seeking the ultimate pleasure. Every human being, from the moment they're awake to the moment they sleep, is seeking pleasure, the ultimate pleasure. What is the ultimate pleasure? What is the ultimate pleasure? What is the greatest pleasure a human being can experience? By definition. What is it? What? It could be through Torah, but it's what is the ultimate fulfillment? Avas Hashem. The greatest pleasure, by definition, is to be in touch with the Kadosh Baruch Hu. Why is that the greatest pleasure? Because the Kadosh Baruch Hu is infinite. He's the ultimate. He's perfect. There's nothing else that's infinite perfect. By definition, there can be no greater experience than being in the presence of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And that's why the Mesillas Yesharim says, in the very first parak, what is a person's obligation in this world? Sha'adam lo nivra el lisaneg al Hashem ve'lehenos meziv shechinaso. That a man was not created, a human being was not created, except take pleasure in Hashem and to enjoy the divine radiance. Now you should listen to the words of Ramchal. Ha'adam lo nivra ella. That's a very cumbersome sentence. He doesn't say ha'adam nivra lisanig al Hashem. Ha'adam lo nivra ella. Let me make it perfectly clear. There is no second purpose. There is a singular purpose to existence. That is lisanig al Hashem. That's what every human being is seeking. The ultimate pleasure. It's Avas Hashem. Dveichus in a Kadosh Baruch Hu. That's the ultimate. That's what we all want. Every human being that walks the planet is a pleasure seeker. Just talk to them. Ask them, why are you doing that? I like it. Why do you play basketball? I like basketball. Why are you drinking? I like drinking. Why are you going to school? What are you doing? Whatever they're doing, and even if they're sometimes they're sacrificing, they're going to go in the gym. Hey, short-term pain, long-term gain. It's still for their pleasure. It's a little more sophisticated. They're gonna struggle for a long-term benefit, a long-term pleasure. If you're smart, that's how you live. But still, the ultimate reason, the ultimate criteria that's defining their choices is pleasure fulfillment. That's what they're seeking. These guys are running around. These secular people are running around looking for pleasure. They're having a good time. Looking for a good time. They don't realize, you know what you're looking for? You're looking for God. You don't just want pleasure. You want the ultimate pleasure. What's the ultimate pleasure? You want a Kadosh Baruch Hu. You want a relationship with a Kadosh Baruch Hu. You want Avas Hashem. You just don't know yourself well enough to realize what it is you're really seeking. So if you get them thinking, and you get them to realize, we understand you. They think that we are like some type of inhumans that don't have any interest in pleasure. That's what they think about Orthodox Jews. Once you explain to them, no, of course, we understand this is human nature, this is what human beings are about, this is what HaKadosh Baruch Hu, how he made them, we understand that. We're here to get pleasure. Oh, really? You're here to get pleasure? That's interesting. I think so, too. Well, how do you guys go about getting pleasure? Well, we have a difference of opinion about what's real pleasure. Let's discuss it. Now you're already negotiating. You understand? And they haven't thought it through. They don't know. They don't understand themselves. They have nothing to stand on. They don't have any worked out comprehensive understanding of themselves, what pleasure is, what's a counterfeit pleasure. They don't know any of this stuff. So it's not so difficult to show them that the real goods are with us. You understand? That's one aspect, okay? Now you need to know that. A person who's going to go into Kirov needs to realize that. Doesn't matter how successful that person is. He could be a big doctor. He could have a lovely family. He could be very involved in the community. But if he's not involved in Torah and mitzvahs, then he's missing out on the essence of what he's seeking in life. He is cutting himself off from his ultimate purpose, fulfillment, and pleasure. You need to know that. Torah is mayim. It's mayim. That if he doesn't have that connection, then he's neshama is drying up inside. You can have all the success in the world, a lovely family, cute kids, great job, beautiful house, nice car, success. He's very involved, active in the community. So what? This is what it means to be human. If he doesn't have this, he's got nothing. You need to know that. The second aspect is that every human being, even Rishoyim, okay, I'm going to show you in a minute, want to be good. They want to do the right thing. They want to do the right thing. How do you know that's true? Because every human being can only choose a course of action under one of two circumstances. They truly believe this is the right thing to do. Let's do it. Right thing to do. Let's go. But we all know, and look at yourself, that there are times in our lives where we have made choices that are not 100% the right thing to do. We've all made mistakes, made choices that we're not proud of. Every human being, before he goes in that direction, there's one prerequisite he has to put in place before he can make that choice. You know what it is? There's one thing every person has to put before him before they can make a choice which they know is less than 100% right. What's that one thing? What?
I know it's wrong.
Not. They need something. They can't just like, okay, let's go. What? A what? They need a justification. They need a rationalization. Why is that? Why doesn't a guy say, look, I've had a great 18 hours. I did lots of mitzvahs, Torah mitzvahs. Okay, now I'm going to spend 15 minutes in doing something inappropriate. I'm way ahead of the game. Do the math. All right, 18 hours of mitzvahs, 15 minutes of inappropriate. I had a great day. He can't say that. He's got to dray around some type of teretz, right? Ein adam chaytosh aniksus lo ruach shtus. That's what the Gemara is saying. You need to rationalize. Even Adolf Hitler. What did Hitler say? I love blood. I love the sound of murder. Gives me great hana. He said, no. I have to destroy the world of the Jewish people because they're vermin. They're the enemy. They're out to destroy mankind. I'm going to liberate mankind. You listen to these Arabs, Ahmadinejad, these Iranians. What do they say? Want to drop a bomb on Israel, God forbid, and murder another 6 million Jews because what? Because we love to murder? Because the Zionist entity is the problem of all of humanity. And we're going to save the world from it. They have to justify themselves. Yeah, everybody has to justify himself because there's only one thing a person can choose. That's to be good. They want to do the right thing. They're just confused about the definitions, what's right, what's wrong. So now, if a guy is looking to do the right thing all the time, every choice, is he looking for Judaism? Is he looking for Torah? Is he looking for a Kadosh Baruch Hu? What's the definite? The right thing is Torah. The Ratzon Hashem is what's right. He, of course, is looking for Torah. He just doesn't realize it. But that's what right is to fulfill the Torah. Listen to Hashem. That's what's called right. Wrong is to go against Hashem. He doesn't realize that that's what he's ultimately looking for. He's looking for Hashem in a second way. But it's not only does he want to be good, but you got to realize that every human being wants to be good so badly that they're willing to die for it. They're willing to give their lives to be good. Meaning they'd rather be good and dead than alive and immoral. I'll give you an example. Rabbi Weinberg used to do this all the time. We take groups in college students. We call them fellowship students. That's what the name of our college programs. So he would take a typical fellowships group, and these are, you know, secular college kids, not exactly, you know, paragons of moral virtue. And he would say to them, what would happen if, God forbid, on your tour in Israel, you're driving on a bus up north, and all of a sudden two Arab terrorists storm your bus, and they grab you and they hold a gun to your head and say, listen, we're going to blow you away right now, but we're going to give you one chance to save your life. You take this knife, and you go across the street to that hospital, and you slit the throats of 300 newborn children. You walk away a free man. Now think for a second. What do you think this is a secular kid. What do you think this secular college student says about that predicament? What do you think he says? What? He says, I can't do it. Yes, and why not? Why can't you do it? What does he tell you? It's wrong. You ask him, between us, have you ever done the wrong thing before? Of course. Now it really pays. Because if you do the wrong thing now, it's going to save your life. You know what he says to that? This is too wrong. This is too wrong. Now think for a second. Is there such a thing as too wrong? No such thing, friend. You know what he means when he says it's too wrong? He means, I'm so clear that to kill 300 infants is wrong, there's no way on earth that I could think of a rationalization to justify it. He doesn't mean it's too wrong. It means I'm too clear. I'm too clear it's wrong. There's no way I can find a way to justify it. I'm done. All the other stuff he did, you know, it's not so posh. So he could kid himself. He could lie to himself. That's okay. This is black and white. No way. Clear as day. Can't do it. It's wrong. But you have to understand the nafgamina of this story. It's very important. The implication is that any time a person understands that something is wrong, they'd rather give their life than transgress it. Every single time. You'll ask me, but we know that the din, the mitzvah of Kiddush Hashem, is only by Gimel Averos. You only have to give your life to avoid Gilui Arayos, Avodah Zarah, and Shfichas Damim. Not every time you do the wrong thing, you have to give your life. But you know why you don't have to give your life to avoid Yinin Chazir? You know what the limud is? Because we have a pasuk that says, V'chai behem. Why do we have a pasuk? Because without the pasuk, you would have think, of course, how can I go against the Ratzon Hashem? My finite life versus the infinite will of God? Infinite wins every time. You can't go against Hashem. Hashem says, V'chai behem. You don't have to hear. But it wouldn't be for V'chai behem. You have to give your life every time. Because that, to do the right thing, is more important than life itself. So you're telling me these secular guys are walking around. If you talk to them, they'll tell you Israel is an apartheid state. It's wrong what Israel's doing. It's wrong to discriminate against gays. They'll tell you what's right, what's wrong, what's right, what's wrong, all day long. They're just upside down what's right and what's wrong. But you see that they have the same drives. The drives are there. They're looking to be good. It's super important to them. They'll give their life for it. They want pleasure, not just stam pleasure. They want the ultimate pleasure. That's Avas Hashem. What's the right thing? It's the Ratzon Hashem. So they're walking around every moment of life looking for Hashem. They just don't realize it. They don't realize it. Because every moment they want pleasure, every moment they want to be good. They don't realize that means every moment they're really looking for a relationship with the Kadosh Baruch Hu. They're just confused. And you need to know that. Because if you know that, then you'll realize that you also, that all you really want is a relationship with the Kadosh Baruch Hu. Everything else is nonsense. It's all nonsense. It doesn't matter who wins the Super Bowl. It doesn't matter. It doesn't really matter to you either. The only thing that matters is your relationship with Kadosh Baruch Hu. That's all you really want. Everything else is confusion. I'll give you one last example. The last example is that every human being wants meaning. It's different than being good. Good is, I want to make sure I'm doing the right thing. Self-respect. Meaning is, I want to know that my life adds up to something. Like, what's going to be? Like, do I show up on the radar? Did my life matter? Does my existence make a difference at all? Like, what will be the sum total of my life? Will I have made any impact at all? We all want to make a difference. We want meaning, to know it matters. Let me tell you something. If there is no eternity, there is no meaning. There's no eternity, there's no meaning. You're going to live 120 years, Mirtz Hashem. And then they're going to put us in the ground and we'll be dead for 5 billion years. You know what 5 billion years is compared to 120 years? 120 years is like, you know, a little quadrant on the chart. It doesn't matter. You're nice to your mother. You weren't nice to your mother. You kept Shabbos. You didn't keep Shabbos. You're dead. That's it. It's over. You have 120. You're dead for 5 billion years. You live for 120. It doesn't matter. But unless it does matter, unless that everything you do is either connecting you to eternity or taking you away. So if there really is eternity, and we know there is because life does matter, means it doesn't just matter, but it really matters. It matters in the ultimate way. I'll give you a mashal and then we'll end. The Stipler writes, he has a beautiful sefer called Chaye Olam, and he writes, if you want to get an appreciation of eternity, he says, imagine the entire planet covered with sandbags from the ground as far as you can see in the sky. And every million years, you remove a single granule of sand from one sandbag. What single granule of sand? 1 million years, 2 million years, 3. He says, now imagine the eons of time it would take to empty out every single granule of sand from those sandbags. You have an idea of how much time that is? It's on and on and on and on and on. And he says, you know what? Eternity turns all that into a nanosecond, because eternity is forever. All that time is nothing compared to eternity. Eternity is without end. Without end. You do a single mitzvah. You learn a single word of Torah. You make a bracha without kavana. You are attaching yourself to nitzchias, to eternity. It's the ultimate meaning. It's the real. It's the reality of meaning. You are connecting yourself to HaKadosh Baruch Hu forever. Forever. Everybody who's walking around, they're looking for meaning. They're hurting. They know their life is empty. What does it add up to? How many chickens can you eat? How many baseball games can you watch? How many, you know, like, it's all noise. What does it all mean? What's it all worth? What does it all matter? They're dying for meaning. They're hurting for meaning. The only meaning is eternity. The only eternity is a Kadosh Baruch Hu. So I'm showing you there are three drives in every human being. There's a drive for pleasure, there's a drive to be good, and there's a drive for meaning. All three, if you understand them in their core, what the essence of them are really seeking, they're all telling you you're looking for one thing and one thing only, HaKadosh Baruch Hu. We're all looking for Hashem. That's what we all want. These things are driving us. We're just unaware. We don't know ourselves. We don't understand the depths of what we're seeking. But if you understand yourself, and you understand what these drives mean, you see them within yourself, you realize we're looking for a relationship with the Kadosh Baruch Hu. That's what we're looking for. Through pleasure, through being good, through meaning. And if you understand that, you realize that, you'll have tremendous confidence to do Kiruv, because you'll realize that what we have to offer people is what every human being, even Goyim, by the way, but what every human being is seeking in life. We have the secret of what they want. They're just confused about themselves. They don't know themselves. And this is the essence of Kiruv, you should know. The essence of Kiruv is not make a bal tshuva, make someone from. It's teach them to know themselves. If they knew themselves, they understood themselves, they'd want to become from. To the degree that you guys are fighting with Torah, you're fighting the burden, it's because you don't know yourself. It's because you don't know yourself. You don't know this is you know, Me'on Olam Haba. This is what you want. This is what you seek. This is everything to you. Every moment of your life, you're looking for a Kadosh Baruch Hu, and you're running away from Seder. There's a little bit of a disconnect here. This is what you want. Okay, you got to think it through. You got to process it. You got to digest it. See how does it fit in. But this is the ultimate. This is what it really means. This is really what it means. And if you think about this, you appreciate it, pleasure, good, meaning, that is the basis of a very strong and healthy relationship to Yiddishkeit. Tadarba.